I'm Scott.
Hello, I'm Julie.
And this is A Good Story is Hard to Find podcast,
where two Catholic friends talk about the books and movies they love and the traces of the one reality they see below the surface.
Yes, that's what we do. And this is episode number 56, and we're going to talk about a movie called Be Kind, Rewind.
Yeah. Directed by Michel Gondry.
Right, right. So yeah, it was neat. I learned a lot. You know, first of all, I just moved, so I'm afraid this room is a little echoey.
Oh, okay.
Because there are no pictures on the walls yet.
Oh, well, it sounds okay to me.
Oh, good. I'm glad.
Yeah.
So, yep. But happy to have moved.
So, yes.
You bet.
Well, because you did it in half a day or something insane like that.
Half a day in a morning, right.
Oh, right, right.
Yep.
Right.
But yeah, fastest it was from a little apartment to a bigger place. So, so yeah,
well,
thumbs
that
up.
Makes it better.
It makes it way better.
Yeah.
Much, much way more better, as Captain Jack would say. But with much more flair.
Yeah, well, yes, with a lot of hand twirling.
Exactly. And rings. Kind of thing. Rings on his fingers.
Yes.
Cool.
Many rings.
So, yes, Be Kind, Rewind. And you said Michel Gondry directed it. So this was a new experience for me.
Okay.
First of all, I had never heard of this movie. Go ahead.
People haven't heard of it. I don't understand that.
And I hadn't heard of Michel Gondry. Michel Gondry.
He's French.
But I have seen Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, although it's been a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And, that's one of Jim Carrey's more serious roles. And,
And that one, as well as it's echoed a little in this, has one of Michel Gondry's, whether you call it a quirk or a preference, or I think if it's a strong preference, he does not like special effects unless he can't get around them any other way. So in Eternal Sunshine, you know, they had the scenes where he isn't that the movie where he was a baby or a little boy? And so they'd have the great big table.
Boy,
in his
memory. I don't remember that, but you should
certainly
be right.
Remembering a different
movie. No, I doubt, you know, don't count on my memory on that one.
For instance, in this, there's when they're sweeting something, just to jump ahead, you know, there's a thing where they do a perspective.
Yeah.
Where, like, King Kong is reaching through a window and you can see her and she's really small because she's standing way far back. That's his kind of thing. He loves to play with that kind of doing effects real, the way they would really have to do them.
That's neat.
No CGI.
No CGI, yeah. There's no CGI in this movie.
No. unless it's in, like, something that's on the screen at the video store.
Yeah, maybe.
So, yeah, and he was a drummer for a French band, and they needed a music video. And so he said, well, okay, I'll do it. And that's how he got his start, doing music videos.
Oh, that's
and
cool.
When I was looking at the music credits for this, he, and of course, Mos Def was in it, so he had some music credits. Michel Gondry had some music credits, and one as a drummer.
Uh-huh.
So
that's neat.
Went back to his roots for it, yeah.
Yeah. And I see in his director list on IMDb that he did The Green Hornet.
Yes, I knew there was some big movie he did where he had to use whatever Hollywood does, and that tanked, I guess.
Yeah, I have not seen it. Seth Rogen was in it.
Right.
Cameron Diaz. Yeah, I didn't see it at all, but yeah, that's like a blockbuster style movie. Yeah, and it's got a lower rating than Be Kind, Rewind, so Michel Gondry probably proved himself right. You don't need this stuff.
Yeah. Can I just have a decent story?
Yeah, just let me have fun.
Yeah, and so the story for this, really quick, is Danny Glover is Mr. Fletcher. He's got a video store called Be Kind, Rewind. They only have videos, no DVDs, nothing else, and is in a very old apartment building that his claim to fame for the building is that Fats Waller was born there or lived there. I can't remember which. And so there's always Fats Waller music playing, and they have a lot of old movies and a lot of specialty movies because they love movies.
Fats Waller was a real person?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, I knew nothing about him.
I should have prepped you beforehand. Yeah, no, he was real.
Okay.
It was, in fact, some of the songs they play are really Fats Waller singing, if you look at the music credits at the end.
Okay.
Now, the story, the history they tell, yes, I can see why you would go, wait, he was real? They were kind of having fun with the storytelling.
Sure,
but,
yeah.
I remember the first time I saw it, because when it starts, you hear a voiceover and you see an old black and white looking movie, but you can see something's kind of weird about it, and they're telling Fats Waller's story in little pieces before you even see the video store. And you don't realize until further into the movie what's going on.
Yep, there he is.
Yep.
Fats Waller. Oh, he died young. 39.
Yeah, he did. It was bad.
Bummer.
But he was influential.
Mm-hmm. Well, cool.
Yeah, but so he has a video store, but it's not doing very well. And it's in a terrible part of town. Of course, this little town seems to be pretty depressed in New Jersey.
Yeah. And people come in and they rent these VHS tapes for a dollar.
Yeah.
And they get, you know, a few customers a day. And this is not like all the way back when there were no DVDs, because there are stores that are renting DVDs as well. So
yeah,
he just doesn't want to change.
Or he doesn't even understand why, because one of my favorite parts of the movie is he goes off for a weekend with his friends, and one of his friends says, hey, you've got to do market research. Look at this little thing that we did, and we're making money hand over fist. Go check out your competition. And you can see him making notes. He's watching with binoculars, and then he goes in and he starts looking around and questioning people, and he's writing down, okay, only the main movies. No knowledge of special movie information needed. You know, so he had no idea that you could run a business like this, like all the big chains are doing.
Yeah, yeah.
And at the same time, which is kind of funny, because at the same time that that's going on, he's left his assistant, Most Def, who I can't remember. Mike, is that his name?
Yeah, Mike, right.
Mike in charge.
And I really liked him, yeah. I don't know. Great? I didn't even look him up. I don't know what he does. With a name like Most Def, he must be a rapper.
Hip hop?
Yeah,
rapper.
Something like that, yeah. So, but he was great. He was terrific.
No, he was. And the thing I loved about the character is the character wasn't super smart. He was a little slow, but he was genuine and sincere.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of because he was a little slow, he'd think of ideas and then just go ahead and do them. You know, it's not like he was stupid, but he just, you know, like the thing with the, he's Mr. Fletcher's, it's not illegible. It's, can't read. You know that there's a word for that. Speaking of a little slow.
Illiterate.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yep.
I also, that's why I liked him. I related to him. Because Mr. Fletcher had been writing to him in the mist on the train window, you know, keep Jerry out, who's Jack Black's character, but it's backwards. And so he'd written it down faithfully backwards so many times, but it never occurred to him it would be backwards. And he was going, oh no, he's illiterate. It's only when he's holding it up to show someone, he goes, oh, he sees the backside.
But unfortunately, Jerry was not kept out.
Yes, well, Jerry's his good friend, and Jerry's kind of he has a like an auto yard. It's like a junkyard, but they fix cars, and he's quite the eccentric. And one of his ideas is that the power stick plant, which is right there next to him, is sending out beams to control your brain. So he goes around with tinfoil on him all the time, and he says, come on, I've camouflaged everything, we're going to break in and destroy the power station, or you know, break the generator or whatever. And did you like the camouflage they had on?
That's what I was thinking of when I started to laugh. And the police car pulls up and he's looking for...
There's that ladder again. Oh, must be a ladder gang.
And these guys are camouflaged. You can't see them. Oh, man. That was good.
Because the camouflage looks really weird when it's on the suits. But what happens is they're up against the chain link fence and on the ladder. And they lean in and they blend in perfectly with the chain link fence and parts of the ladder and parts of the signs and everything. And that's another of Michel Gondry's things. He loves to play with that stuff.
Oh, that's neat. Yeah.
Yeah.
That is neat.
Yeah. It's, that was great. But what happens is, Jerry gets magnetized, but nobody realizes it. So he comes walking into the video store and he erases all the tapes just by being around them.
Yeah. Bzzz, yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. He erases a whole store worth of videotapes. And, you know, so... this was really interesting to me, was the shift in the movie that occurred after that moment. Yeah. It was really odd and quirky. I mean, not that it wasn't later, but it was odd in the scratching your head, like, what the heck? Where is this going to go? Mm-hmm. You know, I had no clue. And then as soon as this happened, it shifted. And then it kind of, the story kicked in and there was a, I don't know, something that I was following at that point. From the first of the movie to about that point, I felt like I was like, what's going on here?
Mm-hmm.
But it was funny. You know, Jack Black, it's hilarious. So...
Yeah. He was reined in just enough. So he wasn't just manic.
Yeah, I always wonder, you know, with him and people like Robin Williams, how much stuff do they leave on the floor in the editing room must be pretty crazy.
Well, you know, because School of Rock, that's one of the very few movies that I've watched all the extras for, and I still remember him saying, you know, Richard Linklater, what a director. He goes, I'd do 5 takes, and then he'd go, hey, let's try one where you don't have the cheese squirting out of your nose, and that would be the good one.
I just
saw Bernie recently, and Jack Black turned in such a great performance, and that's when I went, Richard Linklater must be really good with him.
Oh, wow.
He really knows how to get a good performance out of him.
Yeah,
you
recommended that one. I haven't seen it yet, but it's on my Netflix queue.
Yeah.
So it is streaming. So I got to watch that one. And I haven't seen School of Rock.
If I'd have known that, we would be talking about that instead.
I will put that on my list too.
You have to, you have to, if you don't like rock, pop rock, not pop rock, but like rock from the 70s, 80s.
Oh, sure.
We have friends who don't. They were like, what was this movie about? And we're just like, oh, you don't understand. You never got the lead out, you know.
Yeah. Now, Jack Black, he had a band for a while, didn't he?
Yeah. Yeah.
And did that come from School of Rock? It was right around the same time.
I don't know, but see, the thing... Okay, just to go off on a tangent completely. School of Rock happened because Mike White, who plays the roommate in School of Rock, he actually got an apartment next to Jack Black's in real life. And things would happen, like he'd hear this screaming, and he'd open the door, and there'd be Jack Black running up and down the hall naked, you know. And he was like, so he started writing a movie.
Oh, wow.
And he wound up with this movie, which was really so much better than you would ever think, because I had to have people shove me into watching it.
Huh.
But, so.
Oh, cool. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm eager to see that. And that was directed by the same guy who did...
Yeah, who did Bernie.
Who did Bernie. Okay, cool.
Yeah. Oh, so back to this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so basically what happens is Mia Farrow plays an older lady in the neighborhood, and she's a friend of Mr. Fletcher's, and Mr. Fletcher's gone on this Fats Waller reunion thing where the friend's giving him business advice, and he's called her and said, you need to take a tape back, and by the way, which cracked me up, and by the way, check on the shop. And she comes in, and they've just discovered the magnetization, and they're hiding it. And so she's very severe with them on her friend's behalf. But then she says she wants to rent Ghostbusters. And they're like, oh, no, we don't have that ready yet, but we'll have it back at, you know, whatever time, 7 o'clock the next day or whatever.
Right.
Okay, well, I'll come back again.
They have nothing but blank tapes in that whole store.
Right.
Yep.
And so they don't know what they're going to do. He tries to get a tape from somewhere else. He can't. None of his friends have one that he can borrow to let her watch. And so finally, Mos Def, Mike, comes up with the idea that, well, we'll just do it ourselves. And this is the one that got me, is he's saying that. Jack Black's like, that's crazy. Like, yes, you're right.
Yeah.
And so he says, hey, look, we only have to have 20 minutes worth of tape. She's never seen it. She doesn't know if it's right or wrong. And so he talks them into it, and they recreate Ghostbusters.
Oh, man.
And it was so much fun to me to watch them do it, because
it,
you know, the movie.
Yeah.
They're playing the music from Ghostbusters, and you could see what they're doing.
Yeah, well, Jack Black is, you know, doing the music, and he says, that was the Ghostbusters theme, you know, and it's all being recorded.
And it's like, no, it isn't. Yes, it is. And then they start playing it.
Yeah. Oh, it's funny.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so,
the tinsel that he used for the beam, you know, don't cross the streams, you know.
Yeah.
And oh my gosh. Yeah. So I mean, the whole thing is, it's terrible, but it's so funny.
Well, but and it's also, though, really creative.
It is, yeah.
When you stop and think about what would you do to try and get the same kind of an idea across, how do you do that? And so they were using things like, yes, red and green strands of Christmas tinsel mm-hmm. on a rod as the laser beams or whatever. And so it was just really great. And to get the librarian to look at them and say, shh, like the ghost does. All those yep. things they did, it was clever.
It really was.
So yeah, they give her the movie, and what happens is she's got a nephew and his friends who are just thugs, because that's the kind of neighborhood they live in. Mm-hmm. And they bring it back, and they're hiding. And they say, hey, that was pretty good. What else do you got? I'm like, oh, we don't have anything else. Oh, you do, because we will, you know, destroy you otherwise. So they make him pull two out of a bag. Mm-hmm. And what? I'm trying to remember
King.
The philosopher.
Yeah, Lion King was one of them. And what was the other one?
And RoboCop.
RoboCop, that's it, yeah.
But
like,
did you like...
Who picked Lion King? Yeah, the great, so they're trying to do an animated film.
But did you like the guy... Did you like the string of events? Because to me, at least half of the point of this movie is how much we love movies.
Yeah.
And the whole string of when the girl who they've gotten from the local dry cleaner to be the female lead in any movies, and she's like, oh, I put it in there. It's my favorite movie. And they're sitting in a restaurant, and the other people in the restaurant, oh, that's a great movie. Yeah, I cried. It doesn't matter what the age is. Everyone loved The Lion King.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know. That's something else. Yeah, and just, you know... Watching them do those movies, I mean, they're making, you know, they're doing satires at the same time as they're, you know, so he was doing a Jackie Chan movie. Oh, Bad Boys 2, I think. And, yeah, it's just hilarious. So the stuff that they were doing, you know, and then the stunts were funny. You know, it was just hilarious. Really
Men
funny
Men in Black,
stuff.
Did you like that roller with the little toy bars on it? They're turning upside
turning
the camera
upside down.
Down.
Yeah, that's funny.
And so what happens is they get somebody else comes in and they do, I can't remember what movie for him, but he takes it and he's told all his friends and they've got a huge line outside of everybody wanting them to do their movies for him because they find them entertaining.
Yeah,
and so,
yeah, so they get insanely popular.
Yeah, and so what they do is they say that they're sweeted.
That's right.
Because it's a foreign word. It's a foreign country, and it sounds exotic. So
yeah,
these
come all the way from Sweden, right.
Yeah. That's why it takes a while. That's why we can't get it back to you right away.
Yep.
Yeah, so they would say, people will walk in and go, I want this one sweeted.
Yep. Swede.
And that's
Swede,
now a
thing. And
then, you know, that's
then sweeted. I love it. Yeah.
And that's actually now a... that means something now.
That's
that
cool.
Means a tribute movie done like that, or you know, a bad remake of a movie. It's called Sweeted.
That's hilarious, and that's one of the joys of watching this movie was finding out, you know, this is a whole little thing that I didn't even know existed, and it's hilarious. This is like a, what do you call it, a cult classic movie that has a really good following. I mean, you can
Does
look
it?
Up Sweeted. It's like in the dictionary. I don't know if it's a regular dictionary or the urban dictionary, but
it
says,
urban dictionary,
it says,
sure.
This came from, Be Kind, Rewind. So,
yeah. Well, the thing that was funny to me when the reason I even ever wrote it down to watch it was I read something like 3 different reviews when it came out, and these were respected movie critics. Because I just looked at it and looked at this horrible cover they had for it, you know, this poster, which was lame as could be.
Mm-hmm.
Makes sense once you've watched the movie.
Yeah.
But, and people like Roger Ebert, I think, were going, oh, this was surprisingly good. I really enjoyed it, you know. Love of the movies, creativity, and all. And I went, really? I've got to see it. Okay.
Right. And, what year was it made?
Wow, I... Don't
I've got it here in front of me. Let's look. Be Kind, Rewind is 2008.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's interesting. I just mentioned it because, you know, at the end, what shuts him down is lawyers saying, you know, copyright infringement and things. And that's an interesting thing, you know, in light of how the internet has gone. But, you know, in 2008, he would have been well aware of that. So, you know, I'm not sure if there was really a statement made. Other than, you know, it stunk for them to have these lawyers come in and say, hey, you're not allowed to do that.
I think that was, I think the statement being made was they weren't hurting anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they weren't infringing on the movies because the people had already seen the movies and loved the movies.
Yeah.
It wasn't like the people were going to watch that instead of the, I mean, they were, but it wasn't like they were going to go, I'm going to throw my other movie away.
Mm-hmm.
And because I think the whole movie is a kind of like a love letter to creativity, doing things yourself. And I think that's why Michelle Gondry loves things like that camouflage or like not using CGI, doing his own effects. You know, like the King Kong thing where Jack Black's got the gorilla thing mask on and he's reaching through for the girl who I can't remember her name. And
mm-hmm.
it looks like she's real small because she's standing way far back.
Yeah.
But they've
yeah.
played with the perspective.
Right.
You know, he's because I know after this movie came out for a while, I don't think it's still open. He had a place where you could go. It was a studio where families could go and swede their own movies.
Wow, that's interesting.
That yeah, because he really felt like that was important. Nobody does that stuff anymore. They don't tell their own stories.
Yeah, in writing or literature, you know, there's a thriving fan fiction. You know, I don't read. Mm-hmm. I haven't read hardly any of it, nor have I written any of it. But it's an interesting thing. This is almost the same kind of a thing.
I never thought of that. That's a good connection.
Yeah, and then, right. You know, one of the things, you know, since I was doing SFF Audio with Jesse Willis, one of the things that came out in the early days, well, not so early, because we've been around for 10 years, if you can believe
yeah,
that.
I can believe it.
It's a long venerable. Time. Holy cow.
Well established.
Well established, yeah. Firefly. Firefly ended, and then somebody made a audio drama, Firefly,
yeah.
and it wasn't a repeat of what had been done. It was like a continuation, but Joss Whedon had nothing to do with it. And mm-hmm. I never did listen to them. I listened to a little bit. You know, Jesse was like, "Oh boy, this is exciting," and I'm like, "But no. it's not Joss yeah. Whedon."
I tried it, but it wasn't for me.
You know,
either.
So yeah. I didn't. You know, I tried a little bit of it, but you know, I was never really. I never really wanted to see it or wanted to listen. I yeah. wanted more Firefly, and that wasn't it.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. And yep. You know, I think everybody does. But so it's an interesting thing. You know, that's come about. You know, there was a lot of writers back then that didn't want anyone doing any fan fiction of anything that they've done because they felt like it would infringe on their ability to entertain people with their next book. If everybody's doing fan fiction, their appetite would be gone. That was what their thinking was. But it seems to have turned out that fan fiction can be a good thing because...
Yeah, think of the Star Trek books.
Exactly. It generates interest. It keeps people interested. And if you yeah. have fans that are excited enough to produce it, then... that's the kind of fan that you want, right? So,
right.
Yeah.
I think you could argue that, I mean, because between when Star Trek ended and all you had were the endless reruns, the original, and then the Next Generation, I mean, I read a bunch of those books then.
Uh-huh.
I wanted more, and I think you could argue that's what fueled the audience for the following series and the movies and all that.
Yeah,
kind of
it kept
stuff.
It alive. It kept it alive.
Yeah.
You know, if anybody from Simon and Schuster is listening, by the way, bring back the Star Trek audiobook for heaven's sakes. I love those things, and they stopped making them a long time ago. And there seems to just be a big gap, and they could fill it.
Yeah.
But so it's interesting stuff, and then. You know, that can tie into the whole copying issue, which is the actual movie, though.
Yeah,
I don't
that's
know.
The thing.
I
weren't
know.
Doing an original
yeah,
story
it wasn't
with
like
those
a,
characters.
Yeah, it wasn't a creative... Yeah, that's interesting.
But
that's very
the thing
interesting.
They were missing, I think, is that when you watch that movie, the thing that makes the sweeting work is that you know them and love the movie already.
That's true. That's
because,
a really good point. That's a really
yeah,
good point.
Yeah, because Tom went and found... online, he got interested and started looking around because we were trying to see if at one point there was a website and it said it at the end, but I didn't go back and look well enough to pick it up from the movie. It said to see all of Mike and Jerry's suited movies, go to this website.
Oh, that's cool.
And so he was just kind of thinking, well, I'll just do a search. Well, what he found was Sweeted Movies on YouTube. And the top Sweeted movie was Jurassic Park.
No kidding.
And it was only about 5 or 7 minutes long, but we loved it.
Oh,
it was,
that's
for
neat.
One thing, it was, and it was just what Michel Gondry was talking about in this movie, I think. It was super creative. Mm-hmm. How they did some of this stuff. And then some of the other stuff was just funny, like to do the old man. They had a shaving cream beard, which kept blowing away when the person would talk. So there were those funny things. But then the way they did the velociraptor suits, and then that, you know, that kind of dinosaur that has the fans that come out and go,
yeah,
does that.
Uh-huh.
The way they did that, it was so clever.
Oh, neat.
You know, and it wasn't taking away anything from Jurassic Park. It was you only, because they only had just key points in there, but it was just the way they did it. You could see they were having a great time.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And then, you know, so I guess, you know, that's well and good, but what do you do when somebody puts something out there that is horrific in some way that you feel like is demeaning to what you're doing or something like that.
That's a good point.
I mean, it's like you've got to take both sides. And, I think people are saying, well, I don't want the terrible stuff to happen, so I'll just stop all of it. And it probably turns out that there's not a lot of the terrible stuff.
Well,
and by terrible, I mean some kind of a morally corrupt something, whatever they're doing that would be horrific.
Right.
You know, something that would... the opposite of Jurassic Park, you know. You know what I'm trying to say.
Well, but are those the kind of things that, like, say, fan fiction, since that's kind of what got us launched on that? You don't, I'm sure there must be some subset of that in fan fiction, but you don't see it in general distribution because the fans don't want that.
Yeah, it's true. It depends on what that is.
That's
but
kind
yeah,
of a perversion
right.
of what they love about whatever genre or story it is, isn't it? So they wouldn't want to see that, I would think.
Yeah.
Perverse themselves.
I guess so. So you kind of let it all happen so that you can have the good stuff.
Well, isn't that like free will?
I think it is. That's exactly what I thought I had when I said that.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, that's perfect. Yeah. No, I'm glad that you had it too, because that is interesting that's what it is.
And yeah, you hope the really glorious stuff happens because people love what is good.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting.
Yeah. And another thing, I remember being in a writing class one time where somebody said, well, I keep writing these Star Trek things and I can't get them published. And the writer that was there, I forgot who, it was at a convention one time, he said, well, why don't you change the names of all the characters and make it your own thing?
That's great.
And he said, you know, it can be Captain Smith instead of Captain Kirk. And now, you know, you've got your own thing there. And the guy said, well, maybe I should do that.
That's a great idea.
It is, yeah. So
then that's the launching point.
So, yeah,
point
it launches
creativity.
Exactly.
Well, yeah, because what happens in the movie actually kind of shows that, because at one point they do make a statement that I've always found troubling in this movie, which is they're trying to raise the money to keep the building from being condemned. Mm-hmm. And with the Sweeting, they are actually probably going to do it. And then what happens is Hollywood finds out. They come in with a lawyer, destroy all the movies, take all their money because the fines would be ridiculous. They would be in jail for a billion years or something.
Yeah,
and so they're kind of back at ground zero. So what they do is they say, well, and in fact, that's when I've forgotten. That's when Danny Glover, Mr. Fletcher, has to admit to Mike that he lied about Fats Waller being born in that building. It was something he made up because it was fun, and he was a fun man or a good man, and he wanted him to have something fun to think about.
Right, yeah. Because it's a tough neighborhood, tough place to grow up.
Yeah, exactly.
Give him something good to think about.
It was a well-meaning lie, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And so what happens is somehow other people are listening, and they kind of pick it up and go, well, I can... Well, your history, you own your own history. You can make it what you want. And what happens is then they start saying things like, oh, yeah, because Fats Waller had 6 brothers and sisters, but none of them lived past babies but him. And the minister standing nearby says, oh, yeah, he used to play Bach in our church or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're all just throwing in things, and they wind up making a movie of their story of his life. And when they said, we own our own history, it can be whatever it wants, that bald statement has always bothered me because that's not really true.
Yeah, yeah.
It's kind of like an invitation to kind of take things and just twist them in a wishful thinking way. And and maybe it's because I take that too seriously, because what they do with it in the movie actually shows the best possible way to do that. They aren't saying that they made his life story, but what it turns out to be is a celebration of them and their community and their town.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Fats Waller's music.
Yeah. And then I think that's really what came out of that.
Yeah.
You know, the whole idea of doing a biography of anybody is an interesting problem, isn't it? You know,
yeah. Which perspective do you take?
Yeah. So, you know, like Abraham Lincoln, you know, that really cool movie. Mm-hmm. It's just interesting. You know, you can't show everything in 2 hours.
Yeah. You know, you've got to leave the vampire hunting out.
Exactly. So they'll say, okay, we're not having any vampires. So now what do we do? Well, yeah, let's talk about this, you know.
It's our history. We'll tell it how we want. I guess that's Abraham Lincoln vampire hunter. You got to be careful, but.
Right. So, you know, but yeah, I do understand exactly what you're saying. You can't pretend that the truth is not the truth. But, you know, at the same time, it was like they had it was a different thing that they were doing. They weren't trying to be accurate. They were saying just the same way, you know, as he was told that Fats Waller lived there and it was a way for him to feel good. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody in that neighborhood's kind of bummed out because of the conditions that they're in. Well, they can sure imagine something better or this story that makes him happy, you know, which I think is what it did after they had filmed it, you know?
Yeah. And it's the participation in it because no one's idea is turned away. It might be changed. Mm-hmm. But they all get to act in the movie or help produce the movie, and they all join in with gusto. I mean, you know, the gangster ninjas that were killing.
I enjoyed the scene where they had all the cassettes and they put marks on the cassette that says what part of his life was told on that cassette.
Oh yes.
And they're arranging it like in this big story meeting, and there's like 100 people there at this story meeting. Well, they're all trying to decide. Yeah, yeah. That would have been a long meeting.
But everybody got a voice if they wanted to, and they all got to do it. And did you watch any of the extras? Or because you rented the DVD?
Yeah,
right?
I rented the. Yeah, I was on Glorious Blu-ray. I got it from Netflix, but no, I didn't watch any of the extras.
Which Tom thought was ironic, considering it was about a video store.
That's right.
we watched the one that was about it was called Passaic, New Jersey. Is that the name of the town?
Mm-hmm.
A mosaic. And so what it was is they had different cameramen out just taking pictures of the area, the people sitting playing checkers and stuff, some people who were trying to do things like jobs programs, people telling about there used to be factories, then two little kids were playing with matches and burned them down, and that's when we went downhill, that kind of thing. And so, in a sense, he was making a teeny tiny story about that town. And Michel Gondry came in at some point and he said, you know, when you're doing something like this, the more you make it part of the people here, the better it is. Not only do you get their cooperation, but they have pride in it. It becomes part of the town's history that you came here and did that. And when they were leaving, and they used some of the local people in it as, you know, some of the kids, the thugs and the little kids and stuff. And when they were leaving, one of the little girls was just sobbing. And Michel Gondry was hugging her. And she's like, it's going to be so awful when you're gone. This has been so great.
Oh, boy, yeah.
But that was kind of like, that was the real life version of what happens in this movie, which is that by coming together and getting all involved in this project and allowing their creativity to have full reign and working together on it, they came up with something that celebrated who they were and that they could all watch and enjoy always. Because that scene at the end where they're all watching the movie inside the shop and then outside the shop, that's exactly what that is. It's just this palpable love of the movies, because even though they made the movies, you could see they're getting sad when it's appropriate. They're laughing when, you know, it's not just look, there I am.
Yeah,
although there's some of that too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Yeah, that was really moving. Yeah. All the people that gather around outside, because they were showing it against a window, and all the people that gather around outside that they didn't even know were there.
Yeah.
And they were all moved by the whole thing, too. And it was just, yeah, that's neat. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it was, you know, earlier on when Mia Farrow was arguing that they shouldn't destroy the Sweeted movies, or she was arguing for them maybe to Mr. Fletcher. She was saying they're movies with heart and soul.
Yeah, yeah.
And so what they did is they made a movie with heart and soul.
That's right, yeah. And he said, well, we can make our own movie, you know, of our own stuff, you know. So they kind of avoided the whole copyright thing by branching out into their own stuff.
And that was really actually better because they came up with something so unique, no one in Hollywood would have thought of that.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and that's something, you know, you have someone like Harlan Ellison. I'm probably going to get sued now, but...
but I hear that's his way.
Yeah, but that's what I was going to say. You know, you have Harlan Ellison who, you know, is just leaping to he seems to be poised to sue somebody at all times. And, but, it, you know, isn't that really what art is, you know, to take kind of what was and then, you know, you take that in and then you make your own thing. But, you know, are there any unique ideas anymore? It's, you know, unless you're actually stealing a story pretty much scene by scene, I wonder how you can get sued for a story like that.
Well, the other thing, and I understand the need for copyright and all this kind of stuff, although overly litigious people always kind of annoy me, but there's also this, Jesse Willis at SFF Audio, I was doing a podcast with him that it hasn't come out yet, but I was saying maybe I was reading too much into a story, and he was making a point that I knew very well but had forgotten, that, you know, once art has been released into the world, it doesn't matter sometimes what the artist thought of. What matters is what the people see in it. And I remember reading a story in, I think it was a book by Jeffrey Overstreet about art and movies and story, and he was saying that Steven Spielberg was talking to an interviewer on stage at one of these live events, and the interviewer said, oh, well, and what I loved is the way you put this into your movie. And Steven Spielberg sat there and went, I was not aware of that. But now, and I think it was Schindler's List or something, but and he says, but now that you say that, I can see that. Okay, that's interesting. And then after it was all over, he went up to the interviewer and shook his hand and said, thank you, I never would have seen that without you.
Yeah, and that's a remarkable thing. Have you heard any of the podcasts with Professor Rabkin in them, the SFF Audio podcast?
I've heard a couple of them. And when I see his name, I always try to save them so I can listen to
him. He's so interesting because he talks about things kind of in that way, almost as if, you know, this is a big collective unconscious thing, you know, that we're all sharing in, you know. And I asked him specifically about this point of view, and the first time that we had him on the podcast on SFF Audio was, I don't believe that we had a topic. It was more of an interview or it was a conversation, but you know, it was me and Jesse asking him questions. And, I recall asking him about that, you know, about, you know, specifically, you know, when you talking to an author and you're saying things, you know, that he didn't put in there on purpose, you know, does that make any difference? And, you know, without putting, I'll put the link to this in the show notes, but, you know, he said kind of the same thing that Jesse said, you know, it really, you know, what we're seeing in there, you know, if it's in there, then it's in there, you know, it doesn't matter whether the author intended it or not.
Right.
It's just there. So.
Yeah. And actually what this makes me think about too, is that's, and as Catholics or Christians, we live with that all the time because that's the whole idea behind inspired scripture. All these different people wrote all these different books, and a lot of it was taken from oral works and then written down later, especially the first, you know, Genesis. But it all flows together with one big message. Well, you can't have that unless there's one big idea going on behind it that's helping inspire everybody who's writing. And that's kind of the idea for a Christian, Christ is the story.
Yeah.
He's the original real story, and all other stories are kind of just reflections of different facets. And that's why he used parables, because we understand stories so well. And I just, it does, it all kind of goes together. It's this like interconnecting web. And I love that. I just think it's so cool that we're created essentially to understand life through stories. I mean, is that not the coolest way? Isn't that, we are artistic people in that way.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that's like looking at clouds and seeing faces appear in it. No other animal does that. You know, that's just we, and part of that is we like to organize things into patterns, but that's part of storytelling too. And I really never thought of us that way, as we were created to be artists, but that's being created in God's image.
Yeah.
He's the original artist.
That is a good point. Wow, yeah. That's neat.
Wow, I don't know where it came from, but I'm just like,
geez, I hope we
away.
Recorded
that's
that.
So cool.
I hope I got that on tape.
Well, if not, we can Swede it later.
That's right. Yeah, we ought to Swede an SFF audio podcast.
That's right.
That's funny.
Swede it from SFF. And I think Jesse'd be okay with that,
I
because
he
he's
would.
Really not into copyright. So.
Yep, I think he would. I think he would.
Yep. And we've mentioned him so many times.
Oh, yeah.
So that's good. It's kind of keeping the count up there against Tamahome.
Oh, hey, Tam.
Yeah. I
and
didn't
everybody.
Want to let one go by.
Yep. And Jenny. Hi, Jenny.
The thing. So, wow, I didn't realize that was in that movie. I'm
yeah,
super
that's nice.
Glad I started talking.
That's great. Yeah, that was an excellent point. Yep. And so true. I mean, that's neat. Because, yeah, we would expect it to, if truth exists with a capital T,
mm-hmm.
we would expect us all to be sharing in some of that reality, which is what this podcast really is all about, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Well, and think how much fun this is.
Oh, yeah.
How much fun to create something, and that's part of being free to do what we're meant to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which is also cool.
Very.
So.
Yeah. Indeed.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
No. Go ahead.
I have a question for you now.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, so if your family could find the place where you were allowed to Swede movies,
ooh, uh-huh.
What movie would you Swede?
Ooh, holy cow. A family movie that we would Swede.
Well, not a necessarily family movie,
but
your
family, mm-hmm.
you know, because remember how later they were trying to get more movies out, so they made them shorter, but they allowed the people to be in them, and that's kind of what leads to the them being able to do the big movie at the end, is they're kind of practiced at that.
Yeah, right now we're going through another Harry Potter cycle.
Oh.
With my daughter. She's now reading, she's on book three.
Rereading.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, for her, would it...
Oh,
I'm pretty
she
sure
read
it's
them?
The first time. Yeah, she's 12.
Oh, how fun.
Yeah, I mean, I read out loud. I read book one to her.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, she's on book three, you know, on her own now. And
so much
boy,
fun.
That'd be fun to do a Potter movie.
Oh, and you would do so much better than most of them.
Number three.
I'm just saying. Well, number three was a good one.
Number
but
three was my favorite. It still is. Yeah.
Is it? Because
it
that's
is.
When I quit watching. I was like, finally, a good one. Now I'm not going to watch it.
Yeah,
anymore.
You know, and that's another interesting thing that we haven't talked about on this podcast, but I know that I've talked to you about it,
mm-hmm.
is this phenomenon that has happened to me, that surprisingly has happened to me, and I'm just surprising myself, in that... I am really no longer excited when a book I love is made into a movie.
Yeah.
And this has happened to me just over maybe the last year. So here we've got Ender's Game coming up. And I don't know. You know, we saw The Hobbit, which I didn't hate, you know.
Oh, good.
We talked about The Hobbit, the book, mm-hmm. and stuff. But still, it's not, you know, we always have the book, too. You know, so it's not like I hate the fact that they're being made movies. But it's, I'm not going to be there on the first day for Ender's Game, you know. And being at a movies on the first night is something that, you know, I haven't done for a long time. And I don't miss that either.
Yeah, and I would say for me, the Lord of the Rings trilogy really came as close as anything could to getting it right
mm-hmm.
in terms of how it looks and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, there's so many things, like I said, when I went through the audiobooks.
I just thought exactly what I'm going to Swede.
Yeah.
I'm going to Swede The Hobbit.
Oh.
Because we're going to get it right.
Oh, my gosh. Yes, you will. You'll get it so much. Oh, that's a good one.
That would be cool.
Oh, yeah. That is. Now, see, I had two.
Mm-hmm.
I had two potential, and I told my husband, he went, oh, yeah, our family would be into either of those. One is great. Aliens.
Oh, okay.
Which is one of my all-time favorite movies.
Oh, is it really? Oh, that's neat.
Oh, it might. Well, I don't think it's number one, but It could be number one if I really had to list them. I don't know. Such cool. Almost a perfect movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I know, crazy. But no, it's and not then crazy also, at all. My oldest daughter just mm-hmm. loves that movie.
Yeah.
But the other one, because this one would just be so much fun to do, Wrath of Khan. Khan!
Oh, man, I will start doing some push-ups right now.
And get the wig with the gray hair. Maybe you could just use a mop. I mean.
Oh, shoot. Yes. That is awesome.
But I thought aliens would be fun because you could use cardboard and make the aliens, you know, the different phases of the aliens with the teeth coming out. Nice. And yeah.
That would be funny.
Kind of an action movie thing. So.
Yep.
But. Yeah, that's Hobbit neat. Or Harry Potter would be good, too.
Yeah, the Hobbit, you could, you know, the whole dragon's a problem. Got to make a dragon. Special effects. Well,
you know, you just have the cardboard, kind of like they did for The Lion King or foam. And then so whoever's filming it's making the noises of the dragon. I have to say, y'all, if you've not seen this and you're still listening, you have to go watch it.
Yeah, just go watch this movie.
Enjoy the movie. They're showing them sweeting all these movies. There's this sequence where they're doing movie after movie after movie after movie, and they have it set up so they can just move from set to set to set.
2001, A Space Odyssey.
Oh, yeah, that was great. Yep. Oh, yeah, in the pod bay. And he's running on the wheel.
Yep.
But I was liking... They did movies that were so obscure because they had this whole string of movie names going up, and they'd be doing a movie and you'd be going, why are they dancing with umbrellas? I don't get it. And you'd see dots going around one of them that was, oh, The Umbrellas of Cherbourg, you know, a 1960s French movie. And I'm thinking, I like that somebody asked for that to be sweeted. Okay. I'm just saying. Driving Miss Daisy.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah. Driving Miss Daisy was funny.
Yeah.
Yep. That's neat. But yeah, you're right. The obscure movies, that was cool.
Yeah.
That was fun stuff. Fun, fun movie.
Well, yeah. Good. I'm glad you liked it.
I sure did. Yeah, and I want to go see Eternal, The Spotless Mind.
Sunshine.
Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. I need to watch that again.
Then
I'll pick up The Green Hornet and watch it, and I'll report back.
Okay. Well, I watched Eternal Sunshine... within the last year, because Jeff Miller, the Kurt Jester, had said we should talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the kids was over and had it, and so we watched it. And I just found it kind of so sad for so much. To me, it was kind of melancholy. And so.
Yeah, yeah.
But I don't like things that mess with your mind, so it kind of bugs me.
Gotcha.
Because, you know, being John...
Well, mess with your mind how? Because you loved Inception.
Yeah, but it wasn't taking away pieces of my brain.
That you know of. Do you have a top you could spin?
Oh, well, wait a minute then. All right, now I don't want to talk about this anymore. I can't remember.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, in the next episode, we realize that it was all a dream.
Father, did you keep my drawing in your safe?
There's no such book as Reapers or the Angels.
No. Oh, no. Well, it was a beautiful dream then while it lasted.
Yes, that's funny.
Oh, well, cool. I think I've drained all I can out of this movie.
Well, that reminds me, what is the director, what's the name of the director of Inception again?
Christopher Nolan.
Yeah, Christopher Nolan. Do we know what he's up to now? I'm going to check.
I don't. If only I had a direct line to Rose, I'm sure. Up to date.
Rose, what's he doing? What's he doing? What's he doing?
But I do know that Michel Gondry is doing another movie, and it's a French movie. So,
oh, okay.
And it might be with the Amélie star. You know, that adorable actress. I can't remember her name. I'd have to look it up.
I don't know.
But Rose was pretty excited about it. So
that's cool. Okay.
She, I'm sure she told me more than that, but I just didn't retain it.
Cool.
I'd had a treatment or something. I don't know. All right.
Christopher Nolan, he wrote the story for Man of Steel, which is coming out this year. Another Superman movie.
Okay, I'm just going to say, do we need more? I'm thinking no.
I'm thinking no, too. So he wrote the story for it, but apparently has nothing else to do with it. But, you know, why? Yeah, that's interesting to have a story credit on that movie. Because it seems to be the whole shebang over again.
I know.
Meaning, you know, you find him.
Christopher Reeve's movie was about as good as you can get, I think. Yeah. And it doesn't matter. It's a little old.
And now check this out. This is the first I've heard of this. A movie called Interstellar, directed by Christopher Nolan.
Oh.
Written by Jonathan Nolan and Kip Thorne.
Okay.
And the description is very short. It just says, an exploration of physicist Kip Thorne's theories of gravity fields, wormholes, and several hypotheses that Albert Einstein was never able to prove.
Huh. I had heard the name, and I knew that there was something new going on.
And it says it's science fiction. So, I mean, as I read that, I'm thinking, is that like
who's
a nonfiction movie? No, it does not.
So it's still really early.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's interesting. I'm not. Also known as Untitled Steven Spielberg Space Project.
I don't even know what that means.
I don't know either. Just,
it just makes me laugh.
Probably somebody heard that in a party that he's working on something for in space. And they're
like,
this is it.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, fascinating. That's funny that there's these space movies coming out. I mean, not that there haven't always been some space movies out there, which is I approve of. But I'm thinking there's that Tom Cruise movie coming up.
Yeah.
Where he goes back to Earth. Maybe that's what it's called. I don't remember. And then there's the Will Smith movie with his son. Which
and that's a Shyamalan movie. Yeah.
And now this.
Oblivion.
Of course, this is
Oblivion
later.
Is the name of the one with Tom Cruise.
Yes.
And it looks like a movie that is very similar to that Will Smith movie. The Shyamalan slash Will
that's
Smith
That's it.
Movie.
I knew there was some director who was interested in doing that.
Right. Yeah,
well,
you know what? He's been really fun to follow
on
Twitter.
Doesn't look similar.
Yeah. Well, they're similar in that they're both kind of a post-apocalyptic Earth story.
Yes, I just was thinking of the underground,
kind
the people.
Of
I started thinking
space.
Beneath the Planet of the Apes when I saw the Tom Cruise one.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, sure.
Kind of thing.
Yeah, because the Tom Cruise one, he's running around in buildings, and in After Earth, which is the name of the Shyamalan one, they're way post-apocalyptic because there doesn't seem to be any buildings left.
Yeah, it's like just jungle and wild animals running around.
Yeah, if you're on Twitter, Shyamalan is fun to follow on Twitter.
Oh, really?
He doesn't tweet that often. But,
that's good.
But at the very end, you know, they're doing the post-production on After Earth, and every now and then he'd just send a photograph. We're working on the score, and there would be the guy, Goldsmith, you know, working on the score with the Goldsmith and, you know, giant board
that's
in front of
cool.
him. Yeah, so it was kind of neat. And then he tweeted a day or two ago that he showed his oldest kids The Ring, which is a horror movie.
Oh,
and he said it ended at, it ended. I don't know. He said his older kids. So he said it ended at 1 a.m. and the phone ringing is part of that movie. It was scary when the phone rang. So he dialed his phone at 1 a.m. with his cell phone. Freaked his kids right out. Loved
that's
it.
That's terrible.
Yeah. He said it's probably going to cause a lot of therapy, but it was worth it.
Yep. That's okay. Well, see, I don't really follow Twitter, but Tom follows Twitter, and he tells me all the good ones. He follows Steve Martin.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times Steve Martin's, it's his followers who are actually super funny as they build on what he said. And Conan O'Brien, who actually is my favorite. He is really funny.
I haven't
tried
do it
that often.
I'll go check him out.
But he's hilarious.
Yeah, I follow Steve Martin, too. I actually got retweeted by Steve Martin once.
Really?
I was so happy. Yeah, and it was silly. He was doing this state thing, you know, states being spelled incorrectly. So I sent him Utah spelled incorrectly, and he used it in a joke that he was doing. But, you know, that was hilarious. Made my month. I'm like, he's. I just love him.
Yeah. No, oh, no, me too. And that's why, because him, and then also Stephen Tobolowsky. What do we call him around the house? Tobo.
The Tobo.
Yeah, because we've
you ever see him when he gets your way? Every now and then he goes to Dallas, doesn't he?
You know, and we'll hear him talking about it or see it written down somewhere, and I'll just be going, you know, I'm not looking at the people around me close enough because the places he's going, I'm telling you, they're within a mile of me.
Good deal.
His father must live just, I know his father lives kind of right around here somewhere.
Uh-huh.
Probably he's the slow guy where I'm like, really? Have you never been here before? Move it. I'm in a hurry.
Wow.
But every so often when I think about it, I'll pay a little more attention. But, you know, he doesn't talk about it until he's gone. But cool. He's here kind of a lot, I think, because his father's not very, he's kind of blind and old and like we all get.
Sure.
Needs help.
Did you read Tobo's book?
I didn't.
I did see
that. Well, I kind of feel like it's all the podcast stuff, but it must not be.
It might be. Yep, I'm not sure.
Well, what made me kind of happy, you know, they were talking about the NPR radio deal, and so they kind of shut down the podcast for a while.
Mm-hmm.
But fairly recently, he had a new one, and they just acted like nothing had happened. And he went on and did one of his beautiful, heart-wrenching, funny stories that he does.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
He's remarkable. It's just all those things.
The best storyteller ever. Just his podcast. Oh, so good.
Yeah.
And it makes you appreciate him as a person because he lets it hang out. He makes himself kind of vulnerable.
Yeah, he sure does.
A lot.
Yeah.
And that's what makes a good storyteller.
Mm-hmm. I think you're right. I think you're absolutely right.
So
I'm looking on his site here. Yeah, it was called The End and Introduction, episode 59 of the Tobolowsky Files.
Yes. And it ended, and there was one line, and I was like, oh, I already knew who this person was. Okay. But it was a great story.
Oh, that's neat. That's neat.
Yeah.
Well, good. So he's going to be on public radio then, or is that,
well,
you know?
Well, there was talk for a while that he was, and you'd hear promos sometimes, and they'd say, well, we're not going to do the podcast anymore because he's re-recording all these things, but now you don't hear anything about it, so I don't know if... You know, they're just in one of those hiatus things that happen sometimes because things fall through or if it's off or what.
I
didn't care. I got another podcast. That's all I wanted.
Oh, that's funny.
I didn't care what that's NPR funny. Was going to do with it.
Yeah.
So.
Interesting. Okay. We'll get that on the show notes too.
Yes.
Because, they're terrific. Fun podcast.
Oh, Tommy needs to follow M. Night Shyamalan. He also follows Joss Whedon, but Nathan Fillion. He's like, but Nathan Fillion enjoys talking about himself too much. And I'm like,
that's funny. I don't follow him anymore either. But for pretty much the exact reason.
Yeah.
He seems like a fun guy. I think he would be a lot of fun.
Did you see the thing where the Veronica Mars fans, they did a kick. Veronica Mars.
I did see that.
Yeah, with the studio, they were allowed to. Well, I'll just recap for people who don't know what I'm talking about, which is probably not many of them. But they went to the studio. The guy who created it, I think, went to the studio and said, look, I can get the original cast back together. Can we do a Veronica Mars movie? And I loved the first season, especially Veronica Mars. Really great. Second one, not as good. But. First one, you can't touch it. So
gotcha.
Good. And they said, well, if you can raise the money, we need you to raise $2 million. And they went, well, okay. So they did a Kickstarter project where they put together this amusing video with all the old stars and everything. And they raised, let's see, they were giving themselves a month, and they raised the $2 million in, was it 12 hours?
Holy cow. Amazing.
Yeah, it was something like, it was an amazingly short time.
Yeah.
Amazing. And one of the Onions things, because that was, you know, kind of flashing around the internet for a while. The internet had the, you know, they had their man and the voice of the man in the street. They had a picture of Joss Whedon. And he was going, what? <Yeah. laughs> Just think how much money I could raise to do a Firefly movie.
Oh, man. You know, that's funny that, I mean, you sent me that and that was so funny. Oh, I laughed and laughed. But you remember he did that Dr. Horrible?
Yes.
Right. And that happened during the writer's strike, or during a writer's strike, not mm-hmm. the writer's strike, but during a writer's strike. And I remember the talk then was that he was trying to figure out if it was possible to make money on the internet, like you doing something like that. And then that made everybody think, well, maybe he'll take Firefly to the internet or something, because this was way back when all that was going on. Yeah. And then now he's doing Avengers, you know, so it's like, maybe he'll come back to us, you know, not that I don't dislike the Avengers, but man.
Yeah. I get the feeling that he's kind of like, that's great, everyone, but I'm kind of done with that. I don't know, but, what I had heard about that was he was trying to show the network executives that you could do interesting things on the internet and it would still work and you didn't have to lose your shirt. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the Guild, you've seen that, right?
I've seen not the whole thing. They must make money with
that.
That
keeps going.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know how, but they must.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I don't understand how either.
Although I've been getting, a friend has been giving me the DVDs for Christmas every year for some time. So
that's cool.
That's one way they make money. Because you just sit down and watch for an hour and the season's done and it was a great show.
Yeah, yeah. Yep. I don't know, I'm sitting here thinking, you know, how can I make a living?
Just sitting and doing podcasts?
Well, yeah, I mean, heck, podcasting for a living. Now, that would be awesome.
Wouldn't it?
I got to go to work for NPR. NPR, dear Public Radio International, please give us money.
Mm-mm. We'll tell you what it's for later. We have a lot of ideas.
You bet.
So.
I love it.
Well, so I guess we're done talking about the movie.
You bet, and I liked it. Thank you very much.
Good.
It's like another introduction to something I never would have seen. So that's neat. And this next book is something I probably never would have read. So, there's a movie version of this, so I'll make sure I do not watch it.
What's the movie?
Yeah, Night Watch.
It's funny. The movie, there's the Night Watch and Day Watch movies, and mm-hmm. I think you can enjoy both of them equally, actually, because the movies are, they take some ideas from the books, but they weave them together in a way that is different. They're like complementary, mm-hmm. but the movies very faithfully reflect the feeling of the books.
Interesting.
It's interesting.
Yeah,
I think they're
cool.
Both very good, and you can enjoy both of them, unlike the Harry Potter, some of the other ones we've talked about.
Uh-huh. Great.
Because what they do in Daywatch, now that I think about it, is completely different than anything in the books.
Hmm.
Nightwatch, you can kind of see they pulled the threads from the first two, the Nightwatch and Daywatch books.
Oh,
Nightwatch
cool.
the movie, okay. I mean. Yeah,
these
so
are,
they kind of
from Russia,
together
right?
their own story.
That's cool.
Yeah.
And I've got my copy, so okay. I'm ready to start reading.
Yes, it's really... Oh, so good.
Oh, cool.
No, I got the audiobook and I got an actual copy of it.
Fantastic.
Something for both hands.
Yes. Excellent.
And then the next movie will be our Catholic, well, I guess religious movie.
Religious one, yeah. Of Gods and
or
Men.
Or serious movie.
Right.
Yeah.
And
although it's not it is religious, but it's not, it's just a movie. I mean, it's just one of those really great movies.
Yeah, yeah. And it's then after like, that, we'll talk about Jesus of Nazareth, from the baptism in the Jordan to the transfiguration by Pope Benedict XVI.
Yeah, man, I'm so glad you chose that.
Oh, great. Yeah, I'm reading it too, so.
Yeah, yep. I had to go, okay, how much time, how much a week, how many, okay, so 6 pages a day if I read 5 days a week. That's just about right. I can absorb that much, kind of.
That's awesome, yeah.
But it's so good.
It is, and he's just, yeah. There's so much there.
Yeah, that I'll see these things I marked and go, I don't even remember marking that the first time through. Good thing I'm rereading it.
Cool.
So, and good then deal. You'll have to pick a...
Oh, yeah, I'm on deck, aren't
I'll I? Pick yours.
Okay.
Coming up.
All right. I'll be ready.
Okay. Start thinking about it now.
You bet. Wrath of Khan. Oh, darn, we already did it. No, wait, the Sweeted version... Again. The Davis family suited version of Wrath of Khan is my choice.
Well, you better get busy and I better hook up my VCR.
All right. I'll start doing push-ups.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, well, I guess we have to wait till Chris gets home because he's obviously got to be Captain Kirk or Mr. Spock or somebody then.
No, I want your family to do it. I said the Davis family version.
Oh, well, we should get both our families. One could be the Enterprise and one could be the Kong.
Oh, that's brilliant.
Wouldn't that be fun?
That's brilliant, yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah.
Oh, you go right on quoting regulations.
Mr. Savick. That's right.
I love it.
Okay.
All right.
Well, you have a wonderful 2 weeks.
And
thanks for listening, everybody.
Yes, thanks. And we'll talk to you in another couple weeks.
All right. We'll see you later.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.